Hello, my name is Harriet Tramer, and I'm your host for Reaching for the Gold. We cover aging in all its various aspects and hope you will join us for this broadcast every other Tuesday at this time. Much has been written about how Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia can steal away somebody's intellectual processes. Well, it may impair their memory, and it might also slow some of their functioning. But interestingly enough, it can simultaneously work to make them more creative and intuitive. My guest is shaking her head vigorously here. Our second guest today, or our first actually, is from Time Slips, which encourages participants to tell narratives based on pictures they are shown. Catherine Lewis Hawkins is Time Slips creative storytelling regional trainer in Ohio. Kathy, welcome to the show. How does Time Slips nudge people who might be diagnosed with some form of dementia away from their situation and towards being creative and telling stories? How does it accomplish something like that? That seems almost remarkable. How does it do that?
Thank you, Harriet. It actually is remarkable. And what is beautiful about it is that it encourages the individual to be creative with their own set of intellect and skills that they possess. And they don't have to necessarily do something that's right or wrong. It just has to be creative in terms of what is it that they feel, that they see when they look at a picture. The whole format of Time Slips is created around the idea that we are all, until we are no longer living, we are growing, we are changing, we have the ability to learn and to be creative. So you give individuals that opportunity to use the skills that they have and to be in a forum where they don't feel that they have to give only one right answer, and they blossom. They become storytellers that are engaging other folks. They may be the quiet person in the corner of the room during other activities, and during Time Slips, they're the lead storyteller with the one-liners and the zingers that the rest of the group loves.
What you're saying is fascinating to me. It presents a whole different concept than I or most people have ever heard. All of our lives, we are told, if not there's only one right answer, if you are taking a test, boy, you better, one and one, it better be two. Two and two, it better not be five. Or three, it had better be four. If you're working on a job, you better not wear red, you better wear blue. That's our company's colors. It sounds like what you are describing as creativity is something very liberating. People think of Alzheimer's as being confining. Your world shrinks. But what you are describing is very liberating, freeing. How would you comment on that?
We do, as a society, look at dementia as being very limiting and something that is not wished on anyone. And unfortunately, that premise does not take into account that this is an individual who has the ability, no matter what their station in life, to contribute and to be creative by the thought processes that they have in their head. And what we're taking away is the stigma of saying, well, you are in this one situation, this social situation or a work situation, and you have to follow these set rules. Instead, it's saying you are an individual who has something meaningful that you can contribute to the world, and we want to hear what you have to say, whatever it is that you have to say. And on a very basic level, anyone wants to feel that they're accepted for who they are without any pretense. And Time Slips does a beautiful job of putting that into a process that is systematic but yet freeing in allowing people to speak as they feel so encouraged or so, persuaded by their own thoughts. And it takes away the feeling that you have to do something this way, especially in care facilities. Unfortunately, the way a lot of facilities are designed, even with their activity schedules and the different programs that may happen, it's that at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon, you go to bingo. On Tuesday night at 6 o'clock after dinner, you go to watch a movie. And this is taking all of those social constructs away from it and saying, what would you like to do? What do you see when you look at this picture? And that freedom and that sense of liberation is something that I think people are really drawn to. It's something on a very basic level that everyone needs to have in their life, and especially when you have dementia and so much of your world has been taken away from you just by virtue of not only the disease, but then also being in a facility and you're no longer around everyone that you love and that you've been with.
Have you actually seen this happen? What you're saying is wonderful in theory, and I can understand it, and I'm sure our listeners can understand it. Do you have an example of someone who was really transformed as they told the story? You could see their whole being change. Can you give us an example of that?
Absolutely. One of the most vivid recollections I have from a storyteller really coming to life during the session was a gentleman who actually staff had said, I don't think that this person would be appropriate for time slips. He's not able to see. He hasn't had his sight for over 20 years. And I said, well, I think he can still be part of this group if we provide the right environment. So I had passed around the picture to everyone in the group, including this gentleman, and started with the introduction and welcoming everyone and thanking them for being here. And I gave them a few seconds and then asked, what do you see in this picture? And other individuals started giving some of their answers. And at one point, about 5 or 6 minutes into the session, this individual said, you know, what I see is a flower. And he kind of curled up his hand almost in like a trumpet shape and said, it's bursting forth and slowly coming alive. And he made the motion with his hand of a flower that would actually be opening up, like as a lily starts to open. And he talked about the color of the flower. He talked about the size of the flower and where they were on the field and was completely engaged in the process. And staff were amazed, but I knew he could do it. I knew he had that ability in him, and he was just provided the opportunity. And that's one of literally hundreds of times that I've seen it. I think that's why I love being involved with time slips, because I see people feel validated in their thought processes when they have a diagnosis that, unfortunately, in the medical community at large, is seen as limiting, and you're unable to do something with your brain once you've gotten this diagnosis.
Now, you say with time slips, somebody looks at a picture and you say, what do you see? Tell a story. Now, do they do that just with somebody from the organization? Do they do that as part of a group? How does it happen? And what type of picture? Does the picture have to have some very special characteristics for this to work? What type of picture?
Well, I'll answer the question about the type of picture that works first. Usually the best pictures are the ones that are whimsical, that have a sense of spirit or action to them, and that have no ties to current events, media, historical. So you wouldn't want to pull up a picture of James Cagney and hand that to individuals in a nursing home that were in their early teens and 20s during his heyday, because if they don't know who it is and they can't remember, then that will shut down the process. So a lot of the some of the best images, and we use a lot by Avanti Press. They have some wonderful images where it just captures kind of a spirit of playfulness and a sense of intrigue that you can let your imagination soar and just take a look at what this actually might be from your perspective. Your question about the how does it happen, individuals who are interested in doing time slips can be trained as a facilitator. There are several regional trainers kind of sprinkled throughout the United States, and the Time Slips organization itself is the hub for inquiries and groups or individuals who want to get this training. So you can go through an online training process. You will get feedback from a trainer and get a certification that you can keep for 3 years before you have to redo the certification. For organizations, you can also do an organizational training. In fact, I'm going to be doing one coming up in about a week and a half. And that allows for several individuals within the organization to be trained specifically on what is dementia, what is not dementia, what is creativity, how do you do the method, what are the ways in which this would work, what are some of the roadblocks. And you get walked through this whole process of how you get trained and how you can nuance the subtleties of things that may happen in group that might block the flow of the creativity. And then as a result, individuals then hold a group. And the facilitator is the person who gathers this same core group of residents or patients, or if they come to a day center or a drop-in. And it's best to keep it so that it's consistent in terms of who's in the group, what time you meet, how many times per week that you meet. And the group forms a sense of cohesion and camaraderie from being involved in this. There's been some really neat observations and a couple studies that have shown what happens when time slips participants get together and what happens with their functioning levels.
You're talking about a group, but what if I'm in a situation, small town, wherever it is, where there's not a time slips group near me? Could I just do this with somebody? Or do I absolutely have to have a group? How could that work?
If someone is interested in facilitating time slips and say there's not a facility to practice it at, they can still do the online training and be certified as a facilitator. And then if there's someone, say, if grandma is at home and I'm taking care of grandma and would like to be able to have this kind of a camaraderie and a sense of conversation and communication and creativity with her, then I would be able to do that. It doesn't always have to be groups. I've done a lot of one-on-one work with time slips through the years.
I'm looking right now through the magic of modern technology at some images from time slips. Now, I see here two penguins holding hands. Could somebody tell a story that's people going to a prom or people going to a wedding and they remember their wedding because the penguins look like they have on a tuxedo? Is that the type of thing we're talking about?
It could be. It's whatever they see in the picture. I've had the experience many times of I'll look at a certain picture and think, oh, well, this is three frogs with sombreros on their head and playing guitars. But that may not be what the storytellers see. And you go with what they see in the picture because that's the reality. That's the truth of what this whole process is. If we were looking at right and wrong, you have to describe what's in the picture and it has to be objective. That's one thing, but that's not time slips in the sense of what is it that you see when you look at this? And you can just take whatever comments and details that they're giving and go with the direction of what those individuals are providing for the details. And that's where the story really comes alive, because you, Harriet, in a group would be validated for what your thoughts are, and then you would feel engaged and even more interested in wanting to be a part of this because someone is listening to you and saying back to you what you said and then rereading it, and it's just affirming all around.
That's very interesting. It really is. I'm going to shift now and ask some questions that may be a little hard to play devil's advocate and get some information. What if somebody says, okay, this is wonderful, but so many people have dementia and their families are struggling with how they can pay the bills if they have this person in a facility? My goodness, we all know that Medicaid these days is not paying for everything. They've got so much on their mind that what role can this really play? And yes, it's wonderful if they come alive and answer the questions, but that's not going to totally reverse the course of their illness, their situation, condition. I'm not going to say illness and put a negative on it, condition. How would you respond to that?
I think the best response is that we're not looking at reversing the diagnosis of Alzheimer's when we are facilitating a time slips group. We're looking at taking an individual exactly where they are in real time and giving them the opportunity to be who they are and not asking them or pushing them in some respect to be maybe what they were 5 years, 10 years, 6 months ago. That, I think, is one of the largest, I don't know if you still want to say dangers, but it's one of the biggest frauds of different types of things that are done and kind of marketed that, you know, this is going to reverse the process of aging or of dementia. Time slips is looking at using it holistically because you're looking at the person and saying, I want you as who you are right now to be a part of this. Also, families do have a lot on their plates when they have a loved one in the facility. I had the experience, you know, being on the other side of the table as a family member, and it's very draining when someone is in a facility, and especially when someone has dementia. The wonderful thing about time slips is that, say you're in a small community and there's only 10 people living in this assisted living and budgets are tight and people aren't sure, chances are there's probably someone in the area who's had a time slips facilitation training, and you can contact time slips, the organization, and reach out and ask if there's anything that they would be able to provide in terms of pointing a direction to someone who has that facilitation and then kind of linking you. Because really this has been kind of a grassroots effort of getting people involved from any station they're at, whether it's caregiver, professionally caregiver, family member, loved one, individual who comes in and does groups as a volunteer, because really that's what the whole community-based idea and whole person-based idea of caring for someone is, to keep them as part of the community and not to shut them away in a facility where they're never going to be around other people that they can interact with.
Tell us a little bit about how Time Slips was formed and how it's funded and how you happen to get involved and what your role is with this organization.
Time Slips was formed from the work that Anne Bastings did in drama and theater. And as someone who is an artist, as well as an individual who has a scientific mind and the ability to look at, you know, objectively and subjectively what happens when this group gets together, she started noticing when she was volunteering at a facility what was happening when she started asking people, well, what do you see with this? And the method kind of formed and kind of modulated as she started looking at what was working and what wasn't working, and she developed the methodology around those experiences, and then it's been refined. My experience was when I was an intern at Heather Hill Care Communities in 2003. I was doing my music therapy internship. We had a conference, an annual conference on dementia, and Ann Basting was coming and providing training for time slips and was doing a half-day workshop. And I have a background as a writer and as someone who is an artist and a musician and take a lot of stock in people's stories, and it just seemed really interesting. I took the class. I was hooked as soon as I was in the group and we were talking about creativity. And since then, I've just run with it. I created an intergenerational program at Heather Hill based on the time slips method and using music therapy and time slips to engage youth and residents with dementia on a weekly basis. And that program went for the whole 10 years that I was there. And I've seen so many beautiful moments with family members who are part of the group, and their jaw drops open because mom is part of this group and they can't believe that she's giving details on this picture when I go and sit in mom's apartment and she doesn't say two words to me except where the hell have you been or where's my car keys. It's a different social role that family members can let go of, okay, this is my job to take care of mom, and then be with them just in real time in a relationship that they can still have that's edifying and really meaningful.
Would you like to see time slips get more government funding? Do you think that would make a big difference? I know at this point government funding is pretty scant. Would something of that nature be a big difference? Would you like to see this in every single day center? Would you like to see it in every single nursing home, assisted living home? How would you like to see its future evolve?
And I'll speak, you know, just real briefly on what I think would be wonderful with this, but then also what the organization itself is trying to accomplish. I would love to see time slips in every facility, day center, nursing home, because how it engages the residents or the day center participants, whatever the term is, as a storyteller and as a person does so much for that individual, as well as everyone who's within that community around them, whether it's nursing staff, medical staff, Allied Hearts and Holistic. The other part of it is that time slips as an organization, we've recently gone through a large reorganization. We are now a nonprofit that is no longer based out of the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, but as its own entity. And it is really off the ground and running that there are a lot of organizations not even allied with nursing homes like firefighters or specific groups of individuals from different nationalities that are interested in time slips and want to make this part of something that they do on a civic level. So our hope is that time slips is part of a larger movement of seeing dementia not as a curse, but as part of an individual's functioning and their just overall life process, if you will, that can be folded into who they are, and they can still be seen as an individual that's whole.
My name is Harriet Tramer, and I'm your host for Reaching for the Gold. I hope you will join us every other Tuesday at this time. And also, it would be great if you could like our Facebook page at facebook.com/justwannatalk, JustWannaTalk. .com/1. Also, visit our face page at bbsradio.com/reachingforthegold. Thank you for listening, and I hope you will join us for our next show. Hello, my name is Harriet Tramer, and I'm your host for Reaching for the Gold. We cover aging in all its various aspects, and I hope you will join us for this broadcast every other Tuesday at this time. Much has been written and said about how Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia can steal away people's intellectual processes. Well, it might impair their memory and might also slow some of their intellectualism, but interestingly enough, it can also work to make them more creative. Our two guests today represents projects which are designed to bolster people who might be exhibiting some degree of dementia by giving their imagination and observational skills free rein. Time Slips encourages participants to tell narratives based on pictures they are shown. An Artist for Alzheimer's takes older people and their caregivers on museum tours and other events, nudging them towards giving their impressions of what they see. Our guest today is Dee Brenner, who serves as Program Coordinator, Artist for Alzheimer's. Now, Dee, how do the museum tours your organization sponsors work to spark an interest and observational skills, if that's the best way to put it, in people with Alzheimer's? How does it do that? Give me an example. Explain that.
Okay. Our first premise is we go to the museum like any of us would go with various interests. We are not so concerned with the factual information about a painting, like this was painted by Renoir, or this is an Impressionist. We wait for our participants to start talking. It's what they see, it's what they feel. I mean, art therapy has been around for a long time. We know it's a very evocative thing. We just came from a museum tour at the Worcester Art Museum in Worcester, Mass. Typically, we would arrive about an hour beforehand. The art staff would select a few paintings to see. We set up chairs, and then we get out of the way, basically. Does that make sense, getting out of the way?
No, I'm not sure what you would mean by that, giving away the essence of it.
Okay.
Physically giving it away, I doubt that.
No, what we're doing is we're letting them react to what they see. For example, there was a huge painting of a shipwreck, and the conversation that ensues from looking at a piece of art, there may just be comments about, that's a scary place, I wouldn't want to be there, and where that conversation leads. They may talk about vacations they took, or about why it's important to be in a safe place. Not necessarily talking about the art, but about the feelings and the memories and things that are important to them come out from seeing that art.
That's fascinating to me, because when people go to museums, something happens inside them, and they become very prone to intellectualizing and analyzing.
Being very self-conscious, yes.
Oh, yes. Look at that red. Oh, it reminds me of red by Toulouse-Lautrec, but it's not quite as vibrant. I don't think he mixed it quite this way. They may
exactly.
not know the first thing about how he mixed it, but that's what they're saying. From what I understand, the people who go on your tours, they might not have an intellectual comment. Oh, this is Impressionist, but it moving towards picturesque or whatever, but they have a very strong emotional response.
Exactly. I mean, we may have a professor of art history in attendance. We don't always know the backgrounds. We do introductions in the beginning and learn a little bit about everybody, and we introduce ourselves. But we don't make any assumptions. We like to say there's no Alzheimer's in the room in a situation like that.
Mm-hmm.
Often the museum docents don't know who the care partner is and who the person who's been diagnosed is. It is true that, you know, unless we're art historians, we go to museums and we all feel a little bit intimidated on saying something wrong and speaking about a painting. The part of the disease that's touched the last with most types of dementia is the part that deals with emotion. And so it's so refreshing to hear people talk about what they're seeing and feeling. These are things that that really wouldn't occur to us to say without our filters on.
Our filters on meaning we wouldn't be that open. It wouldn't just flow out from us.
Yeah, we would be more filtered socially. Limitations from just being intimidated about speaking about something we may not know about.
Mm-hmm. Now, here come to the difficult questions. It may well be that somebody who has memory impairment comes into the museum and they can emote about this art, relate emotionally to it, not just textbook, but emotional, wonderful. In any way, does this carry over to what they are doing in their lives? Does it make them any more alert than they were? Does it make their disease any more manageable or something with which they and others can cope?
I would say absolutely. I used to be a program director in a long-term care facility, and I would bring my residents to the museum through the arts program, and there would be a tremendous difference, often in behavior, for the rest of the afternoon. They may not have remembered what they saw. They couldn't tell you they went to a museum, though some certainly could, and they could tell you what they saw. But there's like a physical, emotional memory that it carries within. And I've heard this from other care partners, whether the spouses or children or program directors that bring their residents out. There is definitely a lasting sense of knowing that this was not something that they normally do every day. A lot of these people don't get out a lot. So I've seen it firsthand. Absolutely, it carries over.
Lasting sense, meaning that afternoon, more permanent, or does it depend upon the person?
I think all of the above. I think it depends. I think, you know, we're living for the day, and anything that's going to make someone feel engaged and alive is certainly worthwhile. It normalizes it. It destigmatizes. You know, you bring people out into the community. I mean, 40 years ago, people with mental illness in the public schools and physical illness were not mainstreamed in the schools. And I think it's the same thing with dementia today. Maybe 20 years from now, we'll say, oh my goodness, we had everyone kind of holed up in a facility and we didn't take them out. So it's a re-educating of the society, I think.
Okay, do you have an example, number one, of somebody who their caretaker said this person rarely speaks, they're very subdued, and they suddenly became much more vibrant when they saw the art?
Absolutely. Not just one example, but probably on a weekly basis. Every Tuesday, we're at a different museum in and around the Boston area, for example, from Worcester down to Brockton, up to the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem. So we're running a lot of museum tours every year. And every week there is something that either amazes me or it makes me laugh, or I just shake my head and I'm just so grateful to see that. And I've heard it from family members and from staff members at residences. One gentleman in particular, I remember, it was the Peabody Essex Museum. I don't think the staff person said he had maybe two or three words that he would say on occasion. It's pretty nonverbal. He was in the military, and this particular museum has a lot of maritime history. And he started talking about his war experience, and the staff members' mouths were open. I didn't really know he was most nonverbal. So, I mean, I have seen some amazing things, yes.
Okay, I'm going to ask a few more rough questions.
Okay.
Dealing with dementia is very difficult. caregivers are under a lot of stress, I'm certain.
And I just interrupt? We like to use the word care partner.
Care partner. Why is that different?
Care partner. Well, if you're giving, you get depleted. So a caregiver, there's going to be a depletion and then a respite, and a depletion and a respite. The care partner is more involved, and a care partner can be the community. It's just a slightly different way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. In other words, you're sharing person's care?
And as they are sharing in ours, it's more of a reciprocal, it takes the thought of someone that, you know, then they think they have to be cared for all the time. It puts them in a very almost subservient position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just I think care partner is a little more respectful, and I still slip into caregiver. I mean, that's what we've always heard.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different kind of mindset to think about a care partner.
Oh, it is a very different mindset. It means that you're getting something as well as giving. It is a very different kind of mindset.
Right, and you're not, there's not that depletion after all the giving.
Mm-hmm. It is a very different mindset.
Yeah.
But even if you go on that mindset that you are getting as well as you are giving, and that may be very true, because you get instances, I certainly have heard of, where somebody has some type of memory impairment, and they become a much more loving and giving person than possibly they ever were. So, yes.
That's possible. And conversely, I've also heard the opposite. Not always, but sometimes personalities can change. I've seen it both ways.
Mm-hmm. I understand. But somebody might say, all right, use the term you want. A lot is needed here. If you want to
Absolutely.
Say partner, fantastic. That's probably a good mindset, but a lot is needed here.
Right. More than one person can give. It really has to
More
be a
than
community.
One person.
Yes, it has to
exactly.
be a community.
Community
sorry,
project.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Community
Wonderful.
Project, destigmatizing, normalizing, and it's culture change, and culture change can take a while.
It can take a while. Now, what if somebody says to you, this is beautiful, but what a lot of older people need isn't to be shown art. They need food. They need shelter. They're not being cared for. Shouldn't resources be used on that? How would you respond to a comment of that nature?
Well, absolutely.
In other words, art
you know,
is beautiful,
I mean,
but some older people are impoverished. What can we do?
Sure. I mean, we're talking about social policy, which is a whole other ball of wax. Absolutely, our basic needs have to be met first, and that's another conversation, another show, and another public policy debate in our governmental arenas. We're on the assumption that, and we are nonprofit, so we get grants and funding. It's how we survive. All our programs are free. But yeah, I mean, that's just such another plane of issues that as a country or as a world that we have to deal with, that people don't have those things. And, you know, having worked in long-term care, there are some residences that are better than others. If I could say one thing, if there's a friend or a family member that has a loved one with dementia, the best thing is to, in the hospital, getting their appendix out, the best thing is to be an advocate. You have to educate yourself, and you have to be a voice if someone can't speak.
How was Artists for Alzheimer's founded? How did this come apart?
It was founded by Dr. John Zeisel and Sean Caulfield. Sean had many years' experience in the dementia field. Dr. Zeisel was designing long-term care residences, dementia units, and he got interested in learning about what makes a good environment. And from there, started getting involved in the business of dementia care treatment, and ARTS was formed about 10 years ago. We've been in the Louvre in Paris, had a program at the Museum of Modern Art, the MoMA, Meet Me at the MoMA and Make Memories. ARTS started that. We have two chapters in California, one starting in Cincinnati, and a lot of it's volunteer-based, so it's we're getting there.
How did you happen to become involved in it?
I've been in human services for many years and always have worked in the field of dementia and with older people as a volunteer or, again, as a program director in a dementia unit. And I heard Sean speak. I think it was an Alzheimer's Care Alliance meeting. And I was just so struck with the idea of dementia and theater and art and music. And by the way, we don't just do museums. We do yoga classes and we do movies and Art Deco theaters and we do poetry workshops. But I heard him speak and I started bringing my residents from the nursing home where I was working to the arts programs. And I just fell in love with it. And when an opening appeared, Sean called me and asked me if I wanted to come join them, and I was thrilled.
If you could have a wish list, in other words, if you suddenly got governmental funding for your program, other funding, and you could spend, I'm just going to say, three times as much as you are now. I just said three times, maybe it would be more. Where would you go from here? What would you like to see happen? Would you like to see all day centers that deal with people who have memory impairment, all long-term care centers become part of this type of program? Where would you like to go from here?
I'd like to see more replication of the programs that we have right now in other parts of the country. Many, many people never leave their four walls. They don't get out. Maybe they go out to lunch or they go for a scenic drive. But getting back to things they used to do, going to a coffee shop or going to a bookstore or going for a museum tour or a symphony concert. Not many people get to do those type of things. I'd like to see a replication in more areas. And the only thing holding us back right now is funding. We are training. We have people. In fact, we have a woman visiting us from Ireland who came on the tour with us today. And she had some training. She's going to go back to Ireland and spread the word. We also had a woman from Cincinnati who's starting an arts chapter there. So I think just to, you know, have the nuts and bolts to be able to replicate this in as many places as we can.
Mm-hmm. Let's say as many places as we can. Let's say you have a nursing home. You're head of a nursing home in a small town that doesn't have an art museum or not that much of an art museum. I don't know. I can't answer how many small towns do or don't, but we'll say this one doesn't. How could you make utilization of this program? How could you use that model? I mean, Boston has world-famous art museums.
Sure.
how could you bring that home to an environment that just doesn't?
Well, even if the town just had a little downtown, a couple of stores, a town hall, a historic society, maybe a hardware store. I mean, the concept can be utilized anywhere. It doesn't have to be in an art museum. It could be walking in a hardware store. It could be going in a pet store. I realize that's why most of these programs are in larger cities, but I think the concept could be integrated into other things, basically getting people out into the community.
Okay, you said a hardware store. I certainly don't deny it, but how could you use some of these concepts of using art or creativity to bring people more in contact with their world or to bring out their intuitions, their observations? How could I do something like that?
Well, even if you don't have a Home Depot near you, you go into your local hardware store, there's probably a paint section. And there's a huge wall of paint samples in different colors. I dare say we could go down any aisle in a hardware store and talk about something. And again, I would be stepping out of the way, and the people would be talking about anything from A to Z, from the barn their grandfather built to their mother hiding the hammer from their dad. I mean, just anything. The colors on the color charts. It's just a concept that can work.
The concept of seeing something and having it bring out memories and thoughts and emotions, is that what you mean by the concept?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, could I even do that in my house if this person is housebound? Could I show them?
Well, we do have a program out in California, but, I mean, someone could certainly do this, called Arts Delivers, where there are laminated copies of famous works or photographs, some museum reproductions that are brought into some nursing homes, some residences, some private homes, if the person absolutely can't get out, which you don't see too much as long as there's handicapped accessible transportation. But some people choose not to go out, and that's certainly their choice. So, yes, there is a way to bring, certainly can have a discussion around the table with pieces of art. Absolutely.
If I had some replicas of wonderful paintings, I could use that as a trigger for conversation, even
Absolutely.
If I don't go out. I mean, this may
Absolutely.
Not be somebody who's totally housebound, you know, just cannot get out, but
Sure.
maybe
Absolutely.
It would help them even if they do get out. You could do something of that nature.
You could do both. Just even a 12 by 12 laminated picture of a famous painting. 12 of those, and you could probably talk about those for an hour. A lot of the museum stores sell museum reproductions, whether it's a resin scrimshaw or carvings, Netskis, things like that. Absolutely, things can be brought into the home. I mean, though our focus is bringing people out into the community, destigmatizing culture change, these things can be brought into any residence, any private home, any nursing home, sure.
Then this could be a way that the caregiver or the care partner
and interact.
The person they're working with share? Can
That's
it bring
right.
them closer?
Absolutely. I know one of the things when I was a program director, a lot of times staff, I think we can all be guilty of this, we just see the person on the outside, we forget they have a life, we don't know that they were an airline pilot or an artist or whatever their life was like. You know, they escaped Nazi Germany. So you learn so much about people.
Mm-hmm.
Not just learning about people, but just learning about life. Really, with every discussion and every program interaction, I learn a lot. I learn a lot. I laugh a lot. There's a lot of humor. But yes, getting that intimacy that is created when you learn about someone's life, I think is invaluable, and especially for nursing assistants in residences when they're doing the physical personal care for residents. I think it's very important that they know what this person did in their life, and you know, I think it breeds compassion.
Now, you talk about destigmatizing memory impairment. Sometimes when something is stigmatized, it's because people are frightened of it. They don't understand
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that your project could help people better understand Alzheimer's, understand it does not necessarily rob you of your mental functioning? It may impair certain things, but other things may get even stronger. You think it could help destigmatize and make people less frightened by making them aware of some of these things?
Yes, I really do. I think you're right. It is fear-based. Fear, we don't understand it, and we're also afraid that perhaps we're going to get it or a loved one is going to be diagnosed. When people realize that there can be a life worth living, that it's not, I mean, we all have a death sentence. We're all going to die. But that doesn't mean we sit around and give up because we're all going to be dead someday. There can be quality of life. There can be engagement. There can be laughter. I think education is a huge part of it. Whether they understand the whole neurological effects of Alzheimer's, I don't think they have to necessarily know all that, because I certainly don't. But
nobody
knows that. Right. To know that people can remember. I've had residents where I used to work say, oh, you cut your hair, and they hadn't seen me in a week, and I
mm-hmm.
indeed had cut my hair. So, I mean, memories can come back. I mean, memories can be made. Memories, people can remember, is what I'm trying to say.
Now, if somebody wants to find out more about your organization, how can they do that? You have a website.
We have a website and a Facebook page. The website is www.artsalz.org. And that website, which is under construction, but that website will take you to the Facebook page, and you'll see our three main programs, which is the museum program every Tuesday. It is the Coolidge Corner movie program in Brookline, Mass, quarterly. That's coming up this Thursday, the 20th. And we have a special It Takes a Village program in Brookline, funded by the Brooklyn Community Foundation, that every month we have a different program. We've had poetry workshop, again, yoga. We've had a cooking class. So that's all there on the website. And phone numbers listed. And anyone is welcome to join. You don't have to have a diagnosis.
Dee, thank you very much for joining us today. And I hope more people will find out whatever they can about your organization. Thank you.
Thank you.